Curious Talks with Leif and Elfie.
Each episode, we're unpacking the brains of experts from around the universe.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to
Leif and Elfie.
Ooh, we're in the studio together today. We're not often in the together. It's going really well, as you can tell.
And today we're speaking to Ben Richardson, who is known as Ben the Forest Foodie. He is the Vegan Choice Award-winning influencer, blogger, and forest school teacher.
Radio Reverb.
I probed into its mysteries. Every clue told me a different story.
Radio Reverb.
Lovely. Welcome, Ben. Nice to have you on the show.
Hi there. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Thank you. So you're known as the Forest Foodie. That's your kind of handle on Instagram, isn't it?
Yeah, Ben the Forest Foodie. It basically kind of encompasses, you know, my name, that I'm a foodie and I love nature all in one kind of thing. It was difficult at the time to come up with a name, but I stuck with that one and I seem to like it. So, yeah.
It's nice. I like it. I love the photography is beautiful, I have to say, like on Instagram. Like, I can never make my food look good. It always looks really grey and like different types of. Maybe the food's not good. Is that what I'm doing wrong, Ben?
No comment. I've always loved photography and I think it's a really great creative outlet for me to use what I learned in college basically at home. It's kind of like a creative outlet for me, so I enjoy taking pictures of food and it's a good job I do what I do, really.
Yeah. And so how did you get into this? What's been your journey?
So it's kind of like one of those during lockdown stories that you hear, really. Basically, I just felt like I started my vegan journey about 7 years ago now, and the first sort of few years of it, you go into a real awakening and you start to allow yourself to learn the things that you have kind of either completely out of, you know, blissful ignorance you didn't know, or through experiences that you've witnessed, you kind of allow yourself to admit the truth. And so from that process, I started veganism and I wanted to share with people what I had learned, why I'm vegan, because that is the number one question I was always asked is, why are you vegan? And I come from a point of, or rather perspective, where I want to educate people, not vilify them and make them feel, I mean, the cognitive dissonance you feel when you're explained these things is just natural, because you're being told things that you've been told, basically, you know, everything that your family has told you and society has told you is a lie. Mm-hmm. And it's something very hard as an adult to grasp, I'd say, for a lot of people, including myself at the time. The long story short, I just wanted to share my journey, cooking journey, just rediscovering how to cook with vegetables, rediscovering nutrition. I learned everything about nutrition through veganism. I knew nothing about it before that. I just plated up, you know, a couple of steamed veggies and meat and went from there.
Yeah, it's interesting because we've met and spoken to a few vegans that are doing it for health reasons. We spoke to a vegan bodybuilder who sees it as sort of part of her program that she can get enough protein in this way and it's healthier, helps her recover faster. But it sounds from what you're saying that it was more the kind of ethics of it, or
yeah, for me, it's actually a really sad story, but you know what, I'm gonna say it. Basically, I studied ecology and wildlife conservation at Bournemouth University, and I did an internship where I was involved in practical conservation as a trainee ranger, and I would go out and monitor these wild Dartmoor ponies, their grazing patterns, and how that would help contribute to a large biodiversity of reptiles, which basically means like a large variety of reptiles in a small area that we get in this country. But on the side of it, we being me and the other interns, were also helping an organic farm with their cattle, i.e. feeding them, you know, making sure that everything was running smoothly. But from my experience, and even on a small British organic farm, I just noticed things that really made me question everything. And I saw like mastitis, you know, like blood coming out of udders, pussy udders. The feed they were giving the cows was so full of hormones and artificial proteins that one of the mothers birthed her calf, but it was too large for her, her bits, basically, for it to be birthed. So what they had to do was bring in a doctor, cut her open, not on her stomach, but on her, you know, it's a vagina, basically. And she, from the pain, she collapsed during this process. The calf died anyway, because it kind of suffocated because it was growing so quickly in her body, too quickly for her body to acclimatize to it. And so the calf died. And then each day I went to work, I just watched this mother calf on the end of a field, unable to walk, crying out for her baby. And she had maggots all over her. And it was one of our jobs every day to go and clear her of maggots and make sure she was watered and fed. And it was just in that moment where I just thought, this is really wrong, you know, and this is just one case on a small family run British organic farm. You know, it kind of screams ethics, but actually there was nothing ethical going on.
Please.
Yeah.
Some people might say, oh, this was just a one-off case, or it was something that maybe do you think that the farm was particularly unethical, or do you think that there is evidence out there of this kind of thing being standard practice in a lot of farms?
I think I'm not going to name or vilify the owner or the farm, but it's the guy was very passionate about the practice of farming. Mm-hmm. You know, I could tell he was raised in an environment where this was normal to him, that it was his lifestyle. I kind of understand the premise of it all, but it doesn't justify the practice to me in any way. And, you know, the amount, not even just the cows themselves, but the amount of waste and pollution that surrounded this building, like all the methane and manure seeping into the grass and the smell, and it just felt so like counterproductive for a bit of meat, you know. And then one day we took them to a auction. You basically go to like an auction and sell these cows, and they're just plonked in these racks, and they go through these metal corridors into this almost like arena where they're displayed, and all these people are bidding for them. And it's just like, if they were people, we would be absolutely devastated at this, outraged. Or if it was a dog, or, you know, like, because it was a cow, it just, and I just sat here going, am I missing something? Am I crazy for feeling like awful about this, you know? So, yeah.
It's odd that not all people can appreciate all the pain and suffering. Like, that's what I don't really understand. And also, I think it's such a good story to tell people, though, because there's so much misinformation around an organic farm should be ethical, but actually is it ever ethical to be slaughtering anyway?
No, basically, short answer. No, it's not ethical.
And it's interesting that, yeah, this is the little farm, because some people I know will, you know, eat organic meat, assuming that it is much better, they're treated better. But when we don't really need it, it just seems to be a lot of pain, isn't it? And suffering for what, just like a meal. And again, as you said, there's so much waste as well.
It feels like folly for very little outcome of a really long, expensive, time-consuming, land exploiting process. It just but it's only through this experience that I was self-motivated to make a change. You know, I went down the gateway route of trying corn for the first time and being like, this is okay, you know, it'll do. I'm definitely can't look at mince the same way. So I went vegetarian for 3 months following, or rather during this internship, almost in protest, actually. And I even let everyone know on the internship that I'd gone vegetarian since that day. And they were all like, I can kind of see why. But yeah. Mm. And
are you a bit of an anomaly on that course that you felt that way, do you think?
Yeah. You know, everyone else seemed to just crack on with it. And as much as I was, we're in a very competitive world. This was an internship. I needed to do a good job. I felt so conflicted in what I was doing. You'd never find me doing that sort of work again, ever. Mm. You know, absolutely not. And I would never want to contribute to that either by purchasing these products. It's just, I solidly know from now on I will always be vegan, and I'm proud to be. It's been 7 years now, and I've never felt better about the choice, and my body feels better for it as well, and my mind. So yeah, big fan.
It's interesting, and as well, there's kind of what I think a lot of people don't realize is the human rights issues as well of slaughterhouse workers and how they're exploited. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if people knew a bit more about that, would that also make them reconsider their choices? Like, as you know, in sort of fast fashion, for example, there are lots of labels that use child labor, and people will stop buying from those places. So I wonder, do you know much about the sort of human rights aspect as well?
I mean, I don't know a great deal about, I know that, the human rights aspect is that it contributes to really poor well-being, emotional well-being and support for the people working in these facilities. They statistically have really horrendous mental health issues because of the work they do, repeatedly slaughtering innocent sentient beings all day. It's got to break your soul, surely. Yeah. You can't deny and say it doesn't. And seeing what they see, the blood and the gore and the screaming, just watching the videos on your phone is enough for me to go, no, thank you. Mm-hmm. But I guess it's a socioeconomic issue, because in some places, the opportunities that we've had in life aren't as accessible.
No.
So I guess we have to acknowledge there are some elements of privilege behind this, that in some places, it's the only option they have for employment. However, if we continue this conversation and continue to decrease the demand and decrease the supply, surely the supply and demand can then switch to these people being supported in a job where they're farming soy, for example, or plant-based proteins, or just vegetables in general, and then they don't have to be working in these awful environments. Also, with human rights, I feel like more people are going to be receptive of veganism if, I guess, the human aspect of it is shared. Because if people are struggling to empathize with the animals, maybe they can empathize with the human experience of these industries. Maybe that will help make that connection.
Mm. I think that's a really good point. I hadn't really thought about the impact of people working in slaughterhouses and that. Did you meet any of the people who were part of that process during your study?
Do you know what? None of us ever, thankfully, had to kill any animals. They were sent off elsewhere.
Mm.
There were a few lambs that we looked after that had died in the cold. Honestly, there's a few things that I've actually forgotten and I'm remembering now that I think...
Oh, gosh, Ben, I don't want to traumatise you on this.
It did really... It was a real moment of change for me. It really was. It was a wake-up call. I was 22, I believe. I'm 30 now. And so much has changed about my outlook. I've always been an eco-warrior. I've always been into the environment. I studied environmental science at college and geography. And I always knew that I wanted to be directing myself in a nature orientated career. And it felt hypocritical of me to be contributing to a hugely influential, problematic thing, to call myself an environmentalist and then eat a burger for my dinner. It feels really counterproductive,
And do you think, though, people really appreciate how closely environmentalism and veganism are connected?
I think more and more in the last few years, people have started realizing, because, you know, Netflix is a powerhouse for information.
Mm.
Whether or not that information is always accurate or not, is we're not creating the documentaries. But from what I've seen on there, like documentaries orientated around health, like What the Health, that's an incredible one to make people see about what meat does to our bodies. And then you've got programs like Cowspiracy, Seaspiracy. They don't just talk about the flagship of transitioning someone into vegan, which is the slaughter and the pain, but they do educate you on the land use, the greenhouse gases, the methane, the CO2, the whole production of meat, fish and dairy in a very consumable way for people. So I feel like our access to information has never been better. It's whether or not people choose to watch this stuff, because some people are so deeply against wanting to know the truth that the inconvenient lies are the better option, you know. I think I might be projecting about certain family members in my life, actually. You know, I'm not that generic vegan family member that always talks about it, because at this point, 7 years on, I really don't bother. I just think I've tried my best. I've had my few militant years of veganism where I've been like, you need to know this, you must know this, this is why I'm eating this, if you're going to take the mick out of me, I want you to understand why. And now I'm just like, you do you, I've done my best, I'm going to do me, and that's that. You know, we're still family members and we love each other. It's a very hard thing to bite your tongue on when you know ultimately what your loved ones are contributing to. So
One of the things that I really loved when you first started talking was, and because I've noticed this to be the case as well, that people like quite often will respond a lot more positively to you talking about the positive impact of veganism and the lovely foods and the variety and the colour and the freshness and the health, than they will necessarily be able to face head on some of the damage to which they're contributing to. They kind of bury their head in the sand a little bit. Can you tell us about some of the like positive things that you've personally got out of the change in lifestyle and how you've responded to it?
I think ultimately, regardless of saying my family aren't receptive, they certainly respect my lifestyle choice. They do see why I do it. I've learned so many amazing cooking skills. I was a student at uni that would buy microwave lasagna and pies, do you know what I mean, and like call that a meal. It really changed my palate to food and how I perceive it. So I'm really proud of the skill set I've learned through going vegan. I don't know if I'm going off topic.
No, this is great. I love looking at the food on your Instagram. It just looks really inspiring. Can I ask you a question going off topic from your going off
topic? Yeah, why not?
sort of Leif and I've talked quite a bit about these synthetic meats, because that seems to be a growing thing. Like, what are your kind of thoughts on that, this kind of lab-grown ethical meat thing that's
good? They're not vegan. Lab-grown isn't vegan at the moment. But the other sort of synthetic, the fake meats, I suppose.
Yeah. To be honest, I don't think I'd go with the lab-grown stuff, just because psychologically I perceive it as animal flesh.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think if I ate like a chicken sandwich now or something, I don't think I could actually get it down my throat. It's just the texture and the thought process that goes through my mind. I'm too far gone for that. But with the fake meats, I personally love having the choice. I very much talk about nutritional food on my blog, but I'm also not vilifying of, you know, just being a human and enjoying the taste of things. And a lot of people use taste to justify eating meat, which is not a justifiable reason. However, if I want to incorporate things I used to consume for the joy of that taste, but they are not contributing to these ethical and environmental issues, I'm all for it personally. I love personally this bacon. I really enjoy that. And there's such healthy sources of protein, things like seitan and, you know, you can do things with tofu and tempeh. They're all whole proteins that your body is so well equipped to absorb, even if they're pumped with a bit of salt and sugar. I mean,
they're not pumped with hormones, are they? Like
pumped with hormones. And, you know, I think it's okay to have balance in all aspects of life, you know.
Sometimes we need a little kind of naughty, or like, because I've always said anyway, like chicken nuggets, for example, I don't believe a meat eater would know the difference between a vegan chicken nugget and an actual, just because it's the battering, it's all that other stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if you're going to have naughty food, it could also be, you know, guilt-free in terms of you're not harming another.
Absolutely. And it kind of defeats the purpose of like, well, no, there's no, it's like, meat itself, we don't cook it and just eat it, we season it or we do something with it. And we do exactly the same thing with these raw plant ingredients, but sadly there's this rhetoric, you know, online about how a lot of vegan food is boring because it's made of tofu or because it's made of seitan. But we're ultimately, we're doing the exact same process with these things that you would do with animal flesh. We're just not killing the animals. We're not contributing to the exploitation and deforestation of a lot of farmland. You know, it kind of, again, it just feels really counterproductive to continue arguing about this, in my opinion, you know. But yeah, there we go.
I think the last few years I've just seen, especially in Brighton, it is quite a sort of veggie place anyway, but there's so much more choice. And even supermarkets now, you've got actual like loads of shelves for plant-based and vegan. And so I do feel like it is growing in popularity.
The fact that I can go to, and I'm going to say at McDonald's and get a plant burger.
Amazing.
Great. Call me part of the problem. I'm going to be part of the solution of increasing the demand for the plant burger and reducing the demand for all the other products, because ultimately I think McDonald's are expanding its vegan range, I think I've heard somewhere, and Burger King have whole vegan shops opening up, and KFC have options, and Subway, you know, we are certainly making a difference. Whether people choose to believe it or not, it's happening, and there is so much more than what was there for us years ago when I started vegan. Even before that, I know someone who's been vegan for 30 years. I can't imagine what blocks of awful stuff that she had. Regardless of it being healthy, it probably tasted horrible.
Radio Reverb.
I probed into its mysteries. Every clue told me a different story.
Radio Reverb.
Yeah.
And you're part of a forest school, aren't you? Is that...
I am, yeah.
Tell me a bit about that. I don't know a lot about it, but...
Forest school is basically, it comes from the Scandinavian practice of friluftsliv, which means free open air life. And it is an ethos that they believe in Scandinavian countries that children should be raised in a natural environment for the first few years of their life with the ability to choose what they want to do rather than be told what they want to do, which I think all of our experience at school probably was from a young age. So I'm a bit jealous now that this is a thing. But basically it's the physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, whole self of the child's nurture through doing activities in a woodland setting, either adult-led ones such as whittling sticks or learning to light fires, or just child-led simple activities like mixing potions or hunting for bugs or going pond dipping and exploring what's in the pond and learning to be respectful of these creatures. You know, I teach children when they use like bug pots, for example, not to pick up the bugs with their fingers because they might pull the legs off. So let's use a paintbrush instead and brush it into the pot. And they are so receptive of the simplicity behind that. They're just like, oh, okay, that's actually a really good point. because every other time that I've picked up a worm, it's ended up being three or four worms, you know. So and it really nurtures a lot of neurodiverse children, because it allows them the freedom to discover what they're interested in without being told, you need to do this, you need to do that, we're doing this now, we're doing that now. Some children cannot comprehend change at that age, you know. It's a really wonderful way to teach children without them actually realizing they're learning anything, really. They're learning so much about themselves. And I've done it for about 5 years in different environments. I've worked in a primary school from ages 4 to 10, and the activities and experiences, they graduate with them each year, and then they go off to secondary school knowing how to put up tents. And like, I've released this army of little Bear Grylls kids, you know? and then in nurseries, it's all about sensory stuff, teaching them why this looks this way, why it's making that noise, why does it smell like this. I've got a lot out of it personally, you know. I have a nephew and I love taking him for walks in the woodland with my sister, and my sister thinks I'm crazy sometimes because I'll start talking to him about a pine cone and she'll be like, oh god, here he goes again. But I know that he loves it.
Yeah.
So it seems very simple to me.
God, it sounds so idyllic. It just sounds so worthwhile. And especially, you know, even as an adult, if I'm in a forest, I just feel calmer. And I can just imagine kids must really appreciate that. So what other kind of things do you do with them?
With the older kids, I've done archery, teaching them, you know, hazard awareness, safety, building their strength, things like foraging. My foraging knowledge isn't great, but I have very what I would call beginner worthy knowledge, like picking nettles without gloves on in a way that you don't get stung. It's a resilience building activity for them, and we would make savory pancakes with them called nakusliku, or we would, you know, do blackberry jam. Really basic but cool stuff, and they learn that connection between sustenance coming from nature rather than from Asda. It really gives them perspective that everything we need comes from here. I don't really tend to talk about veganism to children in the larger schools I've worked in, because I can't be off the parental complaints that I get. I have had a few, but a lot of them have been curious about what I do and really loving of it. But I really kind of don't bother using the vegan word in forest school, just because some of the people thinking I'm some sort of pagan witch for trying to teach their children a compassionate way of living. The thing with food and our relationship with food is it's very personal. You know, it's something we all do. It's something we all need to survive. And we are all raised in different environments. So as a teacher and as a vegan, it's very hard to not want to discuss what I've learned. But ultimately, I have to kind of respect some boundaries. As much as I want to be like, you don't need that, you know, it's, I think, I don't know.
That's a hard one,
isn't it? It is a tough one. I've kind of directed it around the focus being on our food comes from trees and the ground.
Yeah.
You know? So hopefully that message one day will be like, well, if the trees and the ground are being degraded and destroyed because of animal agriculture, maybe that's the problem. But, you know, that's for the young ones to figure out in the future. But they'll have a lot more access to information and more people to talk to about it than we ever did have. So I think I'm doing an all right job.
I'm sure it's really good for the children's mental health as well. Just
absolutely
spending so much time now on laptops and consoles and everything else. I know a lot of parents I know are really aware of that, and it not being great for children in terms of socializing and being in touch with their bodies and their environment. Do you get a lot of positive feedback from the parents of children that go to the sessions with you?
Yeah, I do. I have some parents who are over the moon to see their children looking absolutely filthy at the end of the day, and they don't mind. But then you'll have some parents who will be absolutely outraged. And I do want to ask those parents, like, look at your child's face and just look at the joy that is coming from them.
Mm.
That's what this whole experience, this last 2.5 hours has been about for them. So, yeah, I kind of just want to be like, loosen up, but, you know, you can't.
Gosh, that's so weird though, isn't it? Just to feel like as a society, we are so alienated from nature generally. Yeah. Like we have to be so clean and... And it's like, yeah, kids getting dirty. Like, yeah, we should be embracing that. It's like, yeah, go play with more mud.
Yeah. I mean, their immune systems could do with it as well. You know, the building up natural resilience to all the awful things that we are pumping out into the world these days.
I'm so interested in the foraging side of things, though, because that just gives me so much pleasure to go out and actually make things and do things end to end like that. Is that something that you're looking to build your knowledge that you're interested in?
Yeah, I am. I've been doing my Instagram for about just under 2 years now, and I'm recently getting the confidence to talk to my following on camera, and I asked a lot of them recently who are proper nature geeks what kind of mushrooms you can find and what's the best apps to use, and I got a lot of good positive feedback. So I've been put in the right direction of certain influencers who do foraging, and my local woods in East Sussex has just so much variety of fungi. But I'm terrified of just picking that one wrong one and then like throwing an eye out of my forehead or something. You know, you just don't know what's going to happen. I know a lot of influencers who are absolute masterminds at like ethnobotany, and that's kind of like the process of learning how to create baskets with certain tree bark, or what this plant does for you, or what you know, what teas you can make from this leaf. Or there's just so much that we used to know almost as common knowledge that now is such a specialized skill. And I would really love to learn these things. So that's something I'm looking on Eventbrite all the time for local foraging groups, and seeing if I can build my knowledge on that.
Have you come across the urban forager? Have you come across him?
The urban forager? I haven't, to be honest with you, no.
Done a few of his sessions and he's brilliant, but he does things around Brighton like without necessarily going out into the deepest, darkest kind of woods, or some of it's in Falmer. But what really surprised me is that there's so much edible foodstuffs just around, like in the pavements and along the seafront, and just there's just such an abundance of it. But as you say, we've just lost all this knowledge, haven't we? So it just isn't, it's all around us and we just don't see it because we're probably because we're staring at our phones, Ben, and we're just not looking around at our environment in the way that we probably did historically.
But there are also a lot of plants that you wouldn't know are actually quite poisonous, aren't there? So you do have to be quite careful, like even just touching some. So yeah, this is definitely knowledge I think probably everyone should know, but we don't.
I mean, like an example, I recently went to Cornwall with a influencer called Muddy Bootlaces. She's called Becca, and she basically is a vegan wild camper, and she's just amazing. She just exudes positivity, and she's just a wonderful person to be around. And we basically went camping and made cleavers tea together, and cleavers is sticky weed, you know, that thing we used to throw at each other when we were children. But it's like you can make tea out of that by literally just blitzing hot water over it. However, it's very good for you and it's good for clearing the lymphatic system in the body. But she told me, and I would not have known this, that pregnant women cannot drink it because it actually induces labor. And it was used in the past to help women go through labor. And I would have gone, oh, here you go, here, make some cleavers tea. You can have this. It's not poisonous. It's good for you. Who knows what that video could have done? So.
Yeah.
It really is important to know your stuff, you know. That's why I want to build my confidence levels in and knowledge in this stuff before I share it with my following, because you got to be accountable for these things, you know. It's
And also, because a friend of mine was saying that you've got to be careful where you pick things as well, and she wouldn't pick things near busy roads because of the pollution.
Mm-hmm.
That can impact. So yeah, lots of bits and pieces to learn about, really.
I guess like popular public footpaths as well, because you know the amount of dogs that have probably had a wee there.
Yeah.
Yeah. What other things would you like to learn? It sounds like you must have a really broad skill set if you're making fires and doing archery. Are you a person that we need on our Armageddon list?
I mean, my brother's a sailor and he can literally navigate himself from here to Morocco. And then I'm more of the like terrestrial foresty guy. And we always joke that if there was like a zombie apocalypse one day, my parents and my family would just come to us and I'll be like up a tree somewhere with a bow and arrow or, you know, finding some berries to eat. And he'd be like taking us out to the ocean. We're very outdoorsy as people. But yeah, I'm one of those people that doesn't, I always want to learn more. I kind of get bored quite quickly. So over lockdown, I started learning Japanese, for example. I've always loved the idea of going to the country, and I love vegan sushi. And I guess it was just something that I've always wanted to go, and I've always wanted to learn another language. So I thought I'd give that a go. I know that yasai is vegetables, because it's one of the phrases that I learned if I ever wanted to go to Japan, that I would want a meal with vegetables in it. Random, but something different, I guess.
Is this kind of influencing the type of cooking that you're doing then, this interest in Japan and that's
sort? Yeah, I mean, I love sushi. I recently made some rice cakes and I tried carrot lox for the first time.
What's that?
And I think lox is basically the belly flesh of salmon, but I made it's basically like vegan salmon using carrots. And what you do is you basically boil whole carrots and then until they're a little bit soft, and then you chuck them in an ice bath to stop them from cooking. And then you kind of like use a peeler and slice them thinly like sashimi sushi kind of slices. And then you put them in a marinade of garlic, lemon juice, soy sauce, miso, olive oil, and you shake it all together, leave it overnight, and then you take it out and put it on, I don't know, cream cheese or something, vegan cream cheese. It was delicious.
Wow.
And it's so easy to make, and I was like, I'm literally eating like a salmon cream cheese rice cake right now, but it was carrot. I never in a million years, if I wasn't living this lifestyle, would have done something like that.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have.
It's so great. Like it seems like so many more young men, in particular young men and young women, but there's so many more role models for young men who want to get into cooking now, which I really love. Yeah. And they're really passionate about it and really experimental. It's so like positive, and the kind of overlap with wellness and health and fitness I think really kind of helps that as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the subject of men is an interesting one for me, because I've never really felt intimidated by the societal pressure to be very masculine. I'm a gay guy myself, and I kind of feel like you're naturally predisposed to look at the structure of society in an open-minded way and kind of pick apart all these ridiculous ideologies behind who we are supposed to be or how we are supposed to be perceived by people. So I wasn't really intimidated by the idea of being called a soy boy or you know, feminine for being vegan. I don't think it happens as much, but there are still very ignorant you know, people out there that do just think vegan men are not men in a way. It's an interesting one. It's kind of like that's a very generic view on it, but there are people out there that do feel that way, and it really reeks of toxic masculinity. But
yeah, you know, I sometimes get sometimes men seem to use eating meat as a shortcut for representing their masculinity as well. Absolutely. Which I find really, really odd as someone who doesn't eat meat, sort of saying, oh yeah, blah, 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 I'll have to have a big steak, as if that's sometimes, I don't know.
It's very cringy.
Drinking excessively, that's like a masculine sort of shortcut to prove something. It's very odd. But I think in fact, there's lots of studies around veganism and fertility that would almost suggest that you might have better success romantically.
Absolutely.
If you didn't.
Yeah.
massive steak all the time and drink
beer. None of it matters to me, but it's you know, my, you know, my drive's better than it's ever been. I kind of think a real man showing compassion and empathy for others and, you know, living in such a selfless way, I think that's really masculine. I think that embodies what a man should be, you know, and not even just men, just people.
Humans. You know, yeah,
humans. Humans. We don't need to segregate these traits. It's an interesting conversation, that one. And funny enough, most of my following are female. I think about 83 or 84% of my following are female, interestingly.
I think I did read that there are more women vegans than men, if you're looking at that binary, you know. But I think it's like Game Changers, I think it was called that, on Netflix.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
That was just so, yeah. I just felt like everyone should see that, because you always get told, oh, you're not going to be healthy, where's your protein? That totally proved that a plant-based diet, you will go on for longer in many different ways.
When you have someone like Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is the American action man, saying, yeah, he's plant-based,
wow,
that must have empowered so many men to be like, do you know what, this is okay for me to do. And
is he actually 100% vegan now then?
I think he is. But I could be wrong. I'm pretty sure
he endorses the lifestyle.
Yeah,
he's definitely endorsed the lifestyle, yeah. But I couldn't say for certain if he is, but I think he is. Yeah.
But the fact that there are professional athletes on vegan diets just doing really well, definitely it helps. From a health point of view as well, people should definitely consider it if they haven't.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know your situation, Ben, but if you were trying to impress a new gentleman then, what kind of food would you make? What kind of cuisine? What would be your go-to dishes?
I think I'd stick with my strengths and go for something Mexican. I really love burritos and enchiladas, and I make a killer black bean enchilada, and it's like you've got black beans in it and then you have grated butternut squash and carrots, and you cook it in like maple syrup, and then it's like a sweet savory filling, and then on the outside is like a spicy tomato-y sauce that you submerge it in and chuck it in the oven and then put some vegan cheese on top. I think the spice would get something going, and
Radio Reverb.
I probed into its mysteries. Every clue told me a different story.
Radio Reverb.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
This is a bit embarrassing.
Uh-oh.
But I love beans and lentils and things like that.
Yeah.
But they do kind of give you gas. So on certain occasions, I will avoid those types of things because I'm so terrified of it. But is there anything you can do? You just become immune to that if you're doing that every day? Or is there stuff you can do instead of that to avoid it?
I've got a very good metabolism, right? So as soon as I eat something, something's coming out somewhere else, right? And I won't have beans and lentils every single day purely for that reason. But arguably, the longer food stays in your system, the more likely the microbiome is going to be full of bad bacteria. Mm-hmm. So really, I think the more efficiently you need to go, the better, really. I'd say I never struggle to go to the toilet. I guess not every day. Don't eat pulses every day.
Okay.
What about sauerkraut? That's supposed to be quite good for you.
Yeah, sauerkraut, kimchi, things like that. They're very supportive of your biome and all that kind of stuff. Anything fermented, actually, yeah. Okay. Apple cider vinegar as well. I cook with a lot of that.
A podcast to stop me farting now.
Oh, dear. Oh, bleeding.
Yeah. Did you call it a poop cast instead or something? A That was a terrible joke.
Well, it's just, it's a common thing that comes up, isn't it? If you
it's a natural, little, isn't yeah. it? I mean, we just have to do it.
I mean,
get on with it, really, don't we?
But you know, all the evidence is there that it's better for the digestive system as well. So it's just another, you know, we may joke about it, but it's just another good reason to do it, really. On top of all the other reasons that are good to do it, you know. So yeah.
And Ben, so what about parents who are listening in and they've got kids and they want to send them to like a school, or are there forest schools everywhere? Or because you're based in Eastbourne, aren't you?
Yes. So forest school, it's been around 25 years in the UK. The last sort of 10 years it's been growing, but in the last 5 years it's been growing astronomically. I think it's to do with the increasing need for well-being in mental health. You know, we've had a pandemic, we've had so many awful, challenging times, and we've had children raised within their home, within the restriction of their four walls for so long, at a time in their lives where they should have been out experiencing the world and talking to people. My nephew didn't know how to talk to children when he started nursery, because he was always around adults while talking to us on FaceTime and Zoom. So I think now more than ever, mental nurture and well-being for youth, let alone all of us out there, you know, trying to figure out this crazy world right now, it's just so important. So I think as a result, forest school has become a very popular thing in nurseries in particular. You'll find almost every nursery will have, even if it's not forest school, they'll have some sort of outdoor learning program or provision, or their nursery will be set outside, even though they're not technically a forest school, which I am all for, like 100%. I didn't actually realise how many forest schools there are in London. There are loads. They're only going to like the green spaces and parks, but nonetheless, they are getting outside and they are getting their hands dirty and having fun. And I think that's wonderful. So yeah.
Absolutely.
I think it's only growing these days.
Well, yeah. That's really good. And did you hear, it was so sweet. It was really, really sweet. The state of Iceland had told their citizens to go and hug trees. They kind of cleared out ways so that people can go and hug their trees because of the pandemic. And I just thought, wow, imagine if your government said that.
I don't know if we'll ever hear that here, but I'm an optimist. So
yeah, okay, good.
And you know, with that, it actually goes back to the question of other things that you've done in your, you know, random things that you do. I did an online course in Shinrin-yoku, which is the Japanese practice of forest bathing. So I'm not going out into woodlands naked and bathing in them. It's using your primal senses of sight, smell, taste, hearing, to observe, you know, mindfully walk through a wild space, look at the light shining through the canopy of the leaves, and feel the bark on the trees, or sit next to one. It's proven to, if you're feeling anxious that day or irritable, it's proven that distracting your mind with these sensory experiences, it brings you back to yourself. We naturally worry about things because it's something that we've learned to anticipate something that's worrying us. We create a scenario to give us some, you know, ironically it's sabotaging us, but it gives us comfort to think of an outcome, no matter how bad that outcome in your head is, to give us a sense of, okay, this is what's going to happen. But if you want to escape that worry, they say walking in nature and doing these sensory things, it helps you bring you back to your body and just relax. And it's something I actively do. I love going out for solo nature walks, or I'll take my parents' dog out with me and just looking around. And, you know, some people think I'm crazy, but I don't care. It does me good, you know, I love it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, during the pandemic, a lot more people took up walking, you know, the hour a day walk became a compulsory thing. But I think a lot of people that I know have sort of continued that practice since, because they realised actually it's great to get out, get a bit of exercise, and it's very easy to just sit at your desk if you work in an office and eat a sandwich all over your keyboard and then
keep your home. Or
yeah, it's just
that. I think one of the silver linings is we all learned that the world is now full of banana bread experts and nature enthusiasts, and I'm all about that, you know.
Oh yeah. I think there were some positives, definitely. And the fact that, like, I couldn't hear traffic, I was going to the beach every morning, and I was just actually living quite like a good life at that point. And just getting back to nature and slowing down.
I think a lot of introverts were like, hi, welcome to my life. This is what I do. Isn't it great? You know? And I loved seeing, did you see all the like news stories coming out about, you know, wildlife returning to areas that had previously been, you know, claimed by us, and seeing sightings of animals that you haven't seen in so long. It's it really does give you perspective on how distracting and selfish we are as people, basically. You know, I don't think we're ever born knowing this, but we certainly are part of a system that's not working for every living being. We're kind of in it for ourselves, and that's where the proof is in that in lockdown we can see that when our presence is reduced, it did so much wonderful things for the environment. I've never seen the sky clearer as well, or so many bees, to be honest.
I don't know if you can hear, but there's a thunderstorm going on around us.
I've got some sort of grey cloud coming over here, so it'll probably hit me soon.
Shortly. It's quite apt though for this sort of conversation, because I'm kind of loving it. I think what you're saying about forest bathing, I think for the listeners, there's some really good insights in there into, you know, what we can do tip wise. But for people who are living in quite an urban area, do you have any tips for what they can do? Some people might not have a garden.
I guess bring nature inside your home. I mean, around my place, it literally, my windowsill is practically a greenhouse. Oh. Like, it's just got succulents there, a little bonsai tree, and I've also got like scented oils and a nice candle. So you can, you know, again, these things really help with mindfulness activities, you know, smelling something pleasant or watering your plants. A lot of I read somewhere a lot of plants like succulents and aloe vera, they actually cleanse the air in the place you live, and they release very clean oxygen. It's kind of, and some plants absorb moisture, so it's important to have certain plants in your bathroom, for example, that will stop building up of black mold in your bathroom, things like that. It's very simple things you can do. Even if you just put a nice lo-fi playlist on Spotify and just chill out, have a nice cup of tea, you know.
It doesn't have to be too wild, does it?
No. And all these things that I've said, a lot of these things can be expensive, you know, like essential oils and blah blah blah, but really they don't, you know, they don't have to be. I use skincare. That's one of my self-care things, because I like the process of just taking care of myself. And I don't use the most expensive stuff in the world because I can't afford it. But I still try and find things that will work for me. And yeah, so for people living in highly urban environments, bring nature inside or practice things at home that deepen your connection with it, you know?
I think that's really good advice. Are there many forest schools around? There's a lot in London, you said, but are they kind of all over the UK?
I mean, if you literally Google forest school nurseries or forest schools, you do get a good selection come up. Well, it really depends. In East Sussex and West Sussex, there are a lot. We're very fortunate where we live because there are a lot of green spaces. In London, there are a lot because there are a lot of nursery and early, you know, childcare spaces. I'm not 100% sure about up north. I imagine there would be. You can actually, the Forest School Association is a government recognised body that now recognises the provision of forest school. And you can go to their website. If you just Google Forest School Association, they have an entire map, kind of like how the National Trust shows where all of their, you know, reserves and buildings are, where you can find them, basically. Yeah.
And if there's not one, just take the kids out. Don't mind.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, I mean, yes. take you know, you don't have to take much with you. You could even take just their toys from home, as long as you remember to pick them up after and don't leave loads of plastic everywhere. Or you can really do anything. Even if you just take a basket and go foraging with them for some berries and take it home, you're bringing nature back home with you, and you can make something in the kitchen with them, you know. I guess it's just using Google and having a good look. It's very simple. Everything you can do out in nature, really. It doesn't need to cost anything, really.
That's so true. I remember going out walking with my parents when we didn't have money. You just kind of go out in the woods, and that would be a few hours of exercise and nature without having to spend lots of money going to a theme park or something like that, that a lot of families aren't going to be able to kind of afford to do really. That's been really helpful. Thank you, Ben. It's been great to hear about the forest schools and the veganism and what motivates you. Are there any places where you'd recommend people go to find out more about your blog and the work that you do?
So I'm on Instagram as at Ben the Forest Foodie. I also have a Facebook page, Ben the Forest Foodie. I'm on LinkedIn, same again. I've got a link tree, which is Ben the Forest Foodie. So that would be my shameless self-plug.
Oh, brilliant. Would you do a book, Ben?
I really want to. I've written one recipe, and I want to do a campfire plant-based cookbook.
That sounds amazing.
Oh, that would be amazing. Yeah. Because everything's all sausages and marshmallows otherwise.
Yeah, but a lot of camping cookbooks are heavily meat.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to jump in and try and grab a little nugget while it's there, really.
Oh, I love that idea.
I'm in a very slow process of writing a recipe book right now, but we'll see.
Oh, no, I think that'd be really great. It sort of combines lots of positive things, doesn't it, being able to do that? Oh, brilliant. Thank you so much, Ben.
Sorry, I'm a bit delayed. I think because of the rain. Oh, I don't think I got my chair. I'll see you soon.
All right, take care.
You too.
Thanks, Ben. Bye.
Curious Talks with Leif and Elfie.
Radio Reverb.
I probed into its mysteries. Every clue told me a different story.
Radio Reverb.